Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another wonderful evening of broadcasting right here on LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I'm sitting here on my computer looking at the charming, lovely, irascible, wonderful world of Bobby Jean Bell sitting in front of Bryce Canyon, Utah. Maybe it's my imagination, but I think they're just getting better and better and better all the time.
I just had to go right into book two. I couldn't wait. I started the sequel immediately.
I think part of the deal is that this particular writer we have on tonight, I'm going to leave him a little bit of a mystery here for a couple of minutes, even though I can see him and he's smiling like a bird in the hand. Is a writer of not only this book and two others like it, but also of historical fiction. He's an actor, an entrepreneur, a music writer. The guy has done everything. Playwright. We'll get into that in a little bit. But right now, we are sitting here and we're waiting with bated breath to hear from Mr. Henry Park and his conversation with Simon Windsor, of course, the director of Quigley Down Under, Lonesome Dove, Crossfire Trail, Monty Walsh. I mean, the guy just does Westerns better than Westerns did him. Henry, good evening, my friend.
Yes. Good evening. And yes, thank you for having me. And belated Happy New Year's, folks. Sorry to be a week late joining you.
No worries.
But I do have a good excuse, and Simon Windsor is one of them. You know, normally in the film business, everyone starts winding down by Thanksgiving, and nothing happens. You can't reach anyone until after New Year's. This is when everyone I know writes their spec screenplays. But because everyone is pretty much stuck at home, I was working on a couple of True West articles and I got some fantastic interviews. Tom Selleck talking all about his Western career. Mm-hmm. Laura San Giacomo, Tom's wonderful co-star from Quigley Down Under. Walter Scott, not the one who wrote Ivanhoe. I know you guys are literary types, but
he's
the stuntman. He is, but this guy is alive. Ed, he's the stuntman who doubled Selleck ever since his beginning in television and became his stunt coordinator on Last Stand at Sabre River and Monty Walsh. And as you were saying, best of all, Australian director Simon Windsor, who brought us not only Quigley Down Under and Monty Walsh, but Lonesome Dove. I got just some great stuff. It's just terrific. And it's confusing to talk to somebody in Australia because you're talking to them the day after. Which is just sort of disorienting. But, just a few days ago, all of us on the writer's block lost a dear friend, Steve Carver.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Yes, we did. And he was a special guest of ours two nights.
Yep.
And
Steve was a
gentleman, a total gentleman, and just a delight to talk to. And we're sorry to see him leave us.
Yes, it was such a good guy and a gifted director, especially of action movies, probably best known for his Chuck Norris films, Lone Wolf McQuade and An Eye for an Eye, and there's a dozen others. But his greatest passion, of course, was as a photographer.
Right.
And I know he discussed his beautiful book, Western Portraits, with you folks. I had the privilege of watching him shoot Bruce Boxleitner using Civil War-era cameras, incredible long exposures. And you know, as you know from the book, the results are just unforgettable.
Yeah,
and between the films and that book, he really leaves an enviable legacy. Now, the big Western movie news, of course, was the Christmas Day release News of the World. Oh, I'm
right. Sorry. How's that doing?
Right. You know, that's the thing. It's hard to tell. It's number three at the box office, which sounds great. On the other hand, it's only taken in $7.5 million domestically, but all the theaters are closed. So it's
exactly.
I'm just going to say, if the theater only, you know, has only had three people and it's only three people watching the movie, it's 100%.
That's right.
I don't think it has shown anywhere in New Mexico. I think I saw a little blurb about that because I think some of it was mm-hmm. filmed here, and it's like not been able to be shown here at all.
That's right. As a matter of fact, another interview I got to do this past week or two, I had a great talk with Paulette Giles, who wrote the novel. She lives in Texas, in Utopia, Texas. I love that name.
Oh, me
and
too.
She and some friends actually rented out a theater so they could safely be spaced out and watch it on the big screen.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
But here's very the really cool. good news. Starting
okay.
today, you can watch News of the World on Amazon. You can see it from the Alamo Draft House and all sorts of other platforms.
Cool.
So, yeah, you can watch it on your TV now. It'll cost you $20.
$20.
But then again, that's what movies cost the last time I went.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think that's the rental. You know, you have to watch it. I don't know the deal on this particular one, but it's usually what you have to watch it within 3 days and 24
probably.
Hours of starting
right,
it or something
right,
like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
But everything I've heard about it is so good. I cannot wait.
Well, Tom Hanks is like exceptional in whatever he does. So.
Oh, yeah. And he works well in any period of time. He's sort exactly. of a timeless guy in that way. A lot of exactly. actors, you take them out of the current and they don't work.
Right.
Oh, here's something to look forward to. You know Shout Factory, the folks who put out lots of great DVDs of TV series?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They have now gone into movie production. They have Shout
really?
Factory Studio. Yes, and in association with Hideout Productions, they're embarking on a slate of new movies. They've announced three Westerns. Hardin, which, as you might guess, is about John Wesley Hardin. More Dead in 5 Seconds, about an infamous El Paso gunfight. And Old Henry, which better not be about me. Actually,
Old Henry.
I don't think it is, but it's in post-production, so I've actually shot this one already. And it stars Buster Scruggs himself, Tim Blake Nelson, and Trace Adkins. So, don't. And
wow.
one more thing to look forward to, a new French Western.
Uh-oh.
It's called Savage State. In French, it's called something I can't pronounce. It's about French settlers in Missouri. The Civil War breaks out, and they're trying to make their way back to Paris. The trailer looks very interesting, but I just got the movie a couple of hours ago. I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Gotcha.
But it's shot in Canada and a little in France and a little in Spain. So it certainly should be interesting to see.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah. My personal favorite French Western star is Brigitte Bardot. Of course. Well, but she did three Westerns, Legend of Frenchie King, Chalico, and Viva Maria.
Yeah, yeah. Besides
That's
that,
right.
she has a nice butt.
I've heard that. Actually, I've seen that. Yes, you're absolutely
Everybody's
right.
Seen
She's gorgeous. When I was a kid, I used to write MASH notes to her. And to my horror, one of them got returned for insufficient postage. And my daughter found it at my house, the house in Brooklyn one time, and had it framed. So,
I'm surprised your mother didn't
My wife asked if I was going to tell that story, and I said, of course not. And here I am telling
I'm surprised your mother didn't leave it around as you go blind.
And need I say, you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you so much, Henry. We'll be talking to you the 1st of February.
I look forward to it.
Take
Have a great
care,
rest of the month, guys.
Take care, my friend.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
Our guest tonight is, I mean, this guy is really accomplished. He's an actor. He's born in Toronto. He's been like all over. He's lived in London, West End, Hollywood. He's lived everywhere. The guy is, he's a playwright, a screenwriter. He's an actor. Actually, I did see him in a couple of things, albeit I think there were minor roles, Chris, but that's okay.
There are no small roles. There are only small actors. Remember that.
There you go. More actors. That's right. Well, anyway, you know what? He's also an author, and he's written a lot of historical fiction, plus YA novel series, Hunt of the Unicorn is his first one, and then, of course, we have two others following. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Chris C.C. Humphreys. Chris.
Delightful to be here. All that talk of Westerns, I've done two Westerns in my time. Yes, I played one of the leads in a series called Dead Man's Gun. Do you remember that show?
I did see a couple of episodes of that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a different cast every show. The gun, the Dead Man's Gun.
Chris Stern was in that.
Also, everyone was in it. I did a guest lead with myself, Lizette Anthony, and Beau Svensson. Lizette and I were Cockney con artists trying to con the retired, demented general Beau Svensson. and it was pretty sweet, actually. Great part. And then I was also scalped in Hawkeye, the TV series.
Oh, holy crap. That's old.
Yeah, very old. Well, the 80s version, not the 50s version. Bizarrely enough, my dad was in the 50s version in Canada.
No way. Really? Yep. That was with John Hall and Lon Chaney Jr. was Chingachgook.
Well done. You have good memory. Yes, indeed.
My dad did
a couple of guest slots on that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to beat me on Western trivia, as Bobby Jean would tell you.
Nice.
I don't even try.
I learned something last night, Chris, and I don't know if you know this band called Spirit of the West.
Oh, they're one of my favorites. I've seen them so many
too.
Times.
I used to do when I had my band in the late 70s, early 80s, we'd go up to Vancouver and they'd come down to Seattle, and they were just a hoot to be around, and they were so much fun. Well, their lead singer died of cancer.
I knew John quite well.
Yeah. John was a really good guy, and what a fun singer.
Oh, he's great. Their music is fantastic. That sort of Celtic swing to it. It's wonderful.
And actually, my very favorite Spirit of the West song is still The Crawl.
Oh, The Crawl.
Old boys come from the North Shore.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Home for a Rest, which is
that too.
Famous, yeah.
They used to rock out on stage. I mean, they put everybody to shame. It's like my mom used to say, never, never, never pull your pants down in public and never follow Spirit of the West.
Yeah.
Let's do a real quick commercial before we start with you. You're listening to The Writer's Block. Right now, we'd like to have a little short word from LA Talk Radio. Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, in these days of coronavirus and COVID-19, as you're sitting home at your desk doing your job, how about instead of watching reruns of Lassie and the Lone Ranger, you tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to what our hosts have to say during the day. We've got everything from sports to music to self-help to, well, we even have talk. So why not give us a try during the day, latalkradio.com. And remember, every Thursday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio, is The Writer's Block. Have a great day. We are on the air with Mr. Chris Humphreys, and we'll be talking about his book, The Hunt of the Unicorn. And if you want to call and talk to Chris, I got it, Bobby Jean. I'm covered. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. And Chris, okay, let's talk about your unicorn book, because I found it fascinating. And I'm not much into fantasy. Mm-hmm. I've never been a reader of fantasy, but I just found this book amazingly fun to read.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it. Yes.
Yeah, it was. I almost would classify it as a YA novel, although you don't do that.
I don't. No, I mean it's. I tend to try to blur the lines anyway. I mean, publishers love to put things in different categories so they can sell them in certain ways. Hunt of the Unicorn, even though the protagonist, Alice Elaine, is a present day young lady from Manhattan. Mid-teens in the first book. Of course, there are two other books, and she ages in those. The book was actually runner-up for quite a big award up here in Canada in the adult fiction category. Mm-hmm. And the emails I get from people have been quite, very widespread. Of course, teenagers read them, but I always think that I'd have read anything sort of adult from the age of about 13. And mm-hmm. if it was supposedly a young adult, then that's fine too. It's the type of story that intrigues me, and I think it's adventurous, it's historical, it's got a unicorn and other facts.
I often wonder where writers come up with their ideas for books. I mean, we've asked this question 100,000 times. Well, in almost 6 years, I don't know how many shows that is. Bobby, you've got that number. It always amazes me where writers come up with story ideas and storylines, especially when they're such a different tack than they had been writing. I mean, I can imagine you sitting back in your chair rocking, having a scotch and stroking your beard and saying, what should I write? Unicorns.
Well, no, you know what? You're nearly absolutely spot on there with this variation. I was sitting in my basement. I was living in Vancouver at the time, and my editor in New York at Knopf, who I'd written a trilogy called the Runestone Saga for, though they came out, did reasonably well. She said, "Oh, we'd like another book from you," and that was fantasy as well. And I had not thought of writing fantasy before I wrote those three books. I was a historical fiction writer. It was my then wonderful agent in London who kind of said, "This is a big market. The sort of stories you tell, high adventure, families, pressure, all that, would work well." So in those books, that was the it. Write me another. And I went, oh. And so you were right, Jerry. I was sitting there in my office. I didn't have a scotch. It was early. It's, in the morning. So that's early even for me. But I was doing what I can see you doing, using my hands like this. And I was rubbing my hands together thinking, what am I going to write? What am I going to write? What am I going to? And I looked down and I looked at the ring that has been on my little finger since I was 18 years old. And I said, why do I have a unicorn on my finger?
That would be a good. I would ask myself that very same question.
Well, I don't know if this can see that.
So cool.
Oh my God, he's got one, Bobby.
Unicorn,
the rampant unicorn. It's in Bloodstone, and it is the. It is family. It is my family's crest. Now that sounds like I'm from some sort of distant nobility of England, which is not quite true. My great grandfather, who was a horse auctioneer, suddenly hit it big. He married up, as they say in England. He married the coachmaker's daughter. They formed this power team in the late 19th century in Cheltenham. He was a horse dealer as well, and he decided he needed to be a gentleman, so he needed a crest. So he chose the rampant unicorn. We became, that. So I started looking into what the unicorn meant. I thought, what does a unicorn mean? What is this symbol I carry on me, on my person? This particular version was also my dad's ring. And I found out that unicorns were unconquerable, except by a maiden. I thought, well, that's interesting. If I'm writing about a new, they can cure all illness or poison. Or cure, would you believe, viruses? I mean, where is a unicorn when we need one? They are, as I say, unconquerable except by a maiden. Then I discovered the unicorn tapestries, which are these extraordinary medieval tapestries in the Cloisters Museum in New York.
New York, right.
And these tapestries, no one knew who made them. No one knew who they made them for. All we know is there are these amazing depictions of this unicorn story. And I thought, aha, What if it was woven by someone who's the ancestor of my girl in New York, and he wove a doorway between our world, the human world, and Goloth, the land of the fabulous beast? It's kind of like in the Narnia stories. There's the wardrobe.
Right,
you can go
right.
The tapestry was that portal, and it was her ancestor who wove it, and her ancestor's daughter, also her ancestor, obviously, who came through the tapestries to this way 500 years ago, having made a pact with the unicorn that if either needed the other, they would come. And 500 years later, Moonspell, the unicorn, summons this, you know, she's a fairly straightforward Manhattan girl, Alice Elaine, through the tapestry. But the one big thing about her, as Bobby Jean, well, as you both know, is that her father is dying of cancer.
Right.
And so I'm not going to give too much away because I obviously want people to read the book. But just remember what powers a unicorn has. And we won't go into that anymore after that. So
yeah, we try not to do spoiler alerts. So I know that. I know at the start of the book, she keeps asking her dad, is he tired? How is he feeling? Is he okay? And you know, and so there's something you can tell there's something going on, but you don't know yet.
Yeah, there's pressure on both sides. And when she's dragged into this extraordinary world where all our myths live, it's a medieval sort of world of men and beasts, fabulous beasts, not only the unicorn, the griffin and the manticore, they're all over there.
I was just going to say, I found it amazing that her father brought the book back to her.
Yes.
After having read it to her when she was like five.
Yes.
And she did not recall it. And so he read it to her again. Mm-hmm. Or she read it to herself, I guess. But she reread the book and discovered this entire world.
That's right. The story of the original weaver and the unicorn.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What a fantastic story. And what a great storyline. Bobby.
Well, I was going to say, Chris, this was just totally enjoyable. And as a reader, it's always important to me how quickly am I engaged as a reader. And you set this relationship between Elaine and her dad, a very warm, very special relationship. Not all 15-year-olds have that with their dads. Kind of got a thing for vampires maybe and werewolves and her dad, as we're just talking about, presents her this book that was written in 1863, and she no longer is interested in what, you know, 15-year-olds, maybe the vampire story is no longer of interest to her. And I love that as they sit together and read the book, that the book starts out as all great, wonderful, once upon a time books, the incredible yet nevertheless true tale of Alice Elaine Robichon, her adventures in Goloth, land of the fabulous beast, and what happened next. Well, you know what? As a reader, if that doesn't grab you.
Yeah, you kind of have to know what happens next.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bobby Jean. I mean, I knew, you know, like with many books, and especially, especially historical fiction, but you have to set the scene right. You have to give people a reason to keep reading, and you have to do it. You don't want to give too much information just in a sort of, you don't want to give any information just in a sort of, oh, here's information for you. You have to make it active. You have to, as you just pointed out with that title, you know, he presents her with this book, this green covered book. This is the story of our family. Oh, come on. There's a unicorn in it. They don't exist. How do you know? You know, and he reads that story of the original, her ancestor, the original tough girl from five centuries before, and that way you can get all that. Because I thought, oh, maybe I should do it as a backstory or something. I thought, no, have her read it. Draw the people in.
Yeah, well, and I've been to the cloisters. That's the first time that I had ever seen unicorn. And I think, and many, many years ago, when I was probably about her age, or maybe even a little bit younger, you know, today the unicorn, I was in the grocery store today. There was a whole, you know, in the Valentine's Day section, there's a whole bunch of stuffed, you know, fuzzy unicorns. We've sort of, with time, and this often happens, you know, we have forgotten the power of the unicorn in and our main character Moonspell, what a wonderful name. What an
I'll tell you a story about that name in a second.
Okay. Well, that's fine. You describe him pretty early on, and again, it blows away whatever fantasy images you might have of what's the unicorn. We learn what the unicorn really is, and I am a believer. I think they are still here.
Great, me too. I'm with you.
But tell us maybe a little bit about that. That'd be interesting. How did you come up with Moonspill? What a great name.
Well, thank you for saying that about the unicorn. Because the more I read about unicorns, the more I realized that this sort of cotton candy version, the little girl's cuddly toy, is not right. What they like at all. They were fierce, unconquerable. That's why knights would put them on their crests, or that's why I suppose I have it on my ring. They could only be tamed by love, actually, and so they would never be captured. They would and I wanted him. He's 500 years old and he's a bit grumpy sometimes. Yeah. He's a monster. He's in the absolute technical sense of the word. He's a monster, because a monster is a creature who's made up of different bits of different animals. Right. So he isn't a white horse with a horn. He's got a horse's body, a horn, and a goat's beard and cloven hooves. He's
right.
A mix.
Right.
The name was funny, because in that aforementioned trilogy I wrote for Knopf, the Runestone Saga, I came up with this phrase. The hero of that book is a young English boy called Skye, and I had him walk across the room at night, and I said he walked through the moon spill. And we all can see that, right?
Sure.
But the editor, the copy editor, not my editor, the copy editor said, wrote to me during the copy edit and said, this word doesn't exist in Webster's or Oxford English Dictionary. Are you sure you don't want to change it? I said, are you kidding? I've just made up a word.
Yeah, I just coined the word. Shut up. Keep reading.
Yeah. Well, and his partner, we do learn that he has a partner. And that's Heart's right. Ease, when right. I looked at the word, how to pronounce it, it looks like Heart's Ease. But, and I thought, oh, what a fabulous name for her.
Yeah.
So I think the naming of your main characters there are really important, really.
Hold that thought, Bobby. In fact, get ready, because it's coming at you. Okay, we're going to take another real quick break. If you don't mind, Chris, don't go away. Stay with us. And this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. And right now we're going to take a brief little break and hear a little bit about Out West.
Looking for a great read for your long winter's nap? I recommend tonight's featured title, Hunt of the Unicorn, or any of the three books that are part of the Tapestry Trilogy by our guest, Chris Humphreys. Easy to order. Just go to www.outwestshop.com, choose books and CDs from the toolbar, and from the drop-down menu, click Shop Out West on bookshop.org. The Writer's Block book list features titles of our guests. Click a book cover for the link to the interview. And to purchase, check out the Out West Shop Facebook page for our featured book of the day. And we featured two of the books of the trilogy yesterday and the day before. One-stop shopping supports Out West and independent booksellers when you purchase books through our bookshop.org affiliate website. And remember, when reading, it's always a great day out west.
It is. It is indeed. And thank you so much, Bobby. And you're listening to The Writer's Block. We are back. It is now, it's now 6:32. And we are in the studio, of course, with Mr. Chris Humphreys and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And both of them are sitting here staring at my ugly mug. I have told you I have a face for radio. And if you want to call and talk to Chris or Bobby or myself, I don't know why you would want to talk to me. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Feel free to write that down, Chris. 323-203-0815. And you can talk to Mr. Chris Humphreys live and unadulterated right here on the Writer's Block. I have to say, I've always thought that unicorns were around someplace. I always thought they existed. I'm like you, Bobby. Although I think I pretty much thought they were always behind door number three. I always wanted to, because I'm a horseman, a big one from way back, and I always wanted to ride one. But I just got a little worried about the horn. You know, you get thrown over the horn, over the head of that horse, and you are going down hard. I mean, you know, especially if he tosses his head, you are in trouble.
Well, I was just going to say that the more that we learn about the power of the unicorn, the more I really wondered, what is it about man, when you look at those tapestries, that would want to kill him? When you look at the other beasts that you introduce us to, you kind of don't see that any of them really have a lot of value other than they're pretty scary, the griffin and, you know, these other characters. But this character, the power of the horn and what it can do, and
the healing powers, yeah.
The healing powers. And I think it opens up that kind of question in our minds about the power of man versus art. That, you know, we have weavers that create these tapestries. You want to maybe talk a little bit about that tension that you have created in this story?
You know, I have to say before we get into that I believe, and to make your point, Bobby, I think all the mythology of the unicorn that's come down over hundreds and hundreds of years, because we've been talking about unicorns since the Romans and the
so they had to be Greeks.
Yeah,
right. But the mythology that come down about the unicorn was that they were extremely fierce, and they put up with no crap from anybody, and they were very, very, very hard to tame. In fact, you couldn't tame one unless you were a maiden.
Yeah.
Ramirez.
And you had to love the animal.
That's right. The deal. And also you can use mirrors,
because
they're lured by their own reflection, which is fascinating. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, there are various myths, of course, and some of them are a bit contradictory. I didn't use them all, but I thought one of the most important was the idea that they were really, and this speaks to what you were asking about, Bobby Jean, the sort of tension there. They are really the shepherds of the other animals. When in the book, as you know, again, it's not a spoiler alert, really, it's just an incident that occurs. He takes Elaine with him when he goes and what it's called cons, or it's called the conning of this polluted stream, which has been polluted by man. It's like effluent from this warlord's forges have polluted this stream, and all the animals in this valley cannot drink this polluted water. But as soon as the unicorn, lays his horn in the water, it cons it. It basically, you know, that's what the term was, the conning, and it makes the water pure to drink. So all these animals have gathered at this place, and they've got a pact. You know, the bears are sitting down next to the wolves who are sitting next to the wolves, while the hawks are in the trees with the pigeons. You know, they've got a pact not to start a ruckus because they're all being shepherded by the unicorn. And I think that contrast is there in the book as well, which is what I think you were talking about, that contrast between what man can wreak upon the planet and what a purer creature whose only concern is helping can heal on the planet. Right. And, you know, well, there's definitely that there. I mean, it's not by any means a tract about ecology or climate change at all. However, you know, I write today. This is a fantasy book, but I'm writing for today's audience, and they're going to be very aware of those themes. And, you know, as I say, where is a unicorn when we need one now? I mean, it's not only obviously what we're all going through with COVID, but also, you know, the pollution of the planet and the symbol of purity like that. And the humans in the book, at least the human, not the dad, but the humans in Goloth, tyrant King Leo, you know, whose job it is to establish his right to rule by slaying a unicorn when he comes to the throne. And that's why he's Heartsease, of course, and that's why Moonspell summons her. Anyway, we won't give away too much of the...
Yeah.
That's it, yeah. But Bobby, sorry, I have a quick question for you. You say you've dived straight into book two as well.
I did. Yes, and so our main character, Elaine's a little bit older. I just happened to have book two in my Kindle, and I just went right into it. So I don't know, I'm about maybe only a third of a way at the moment. And I know we weren't necessarily going to talk about it tonight, but I would just say to readers, you will want to read the trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, you will want to read the trilogy.
Well, I had to write, you know, the interesting sort of backstory to all this was that I thought Hunted Unicorn was going to be a one-off. I didn't think I'd write another book. But it's one of those things, you know, unless you kill the character at the end of the book, you know, they still live. And I started wondering about her life. What does someone who, well, I won't say what she's done in Golov, but someone who's had those experiences do back in, you know, back at school? Can she really go and study calculus?
Right.
You know, so what actually happened? So there was, and then, of course, you know, once I started reading about dragons, I thought, well, who doesn't want to write about a dragon?
Yeah. Well, you know, we find dinosaur bones. One of these days, we're going to find unicorn bones and we're going to find dragon bones, right?
They're
waiting to be discovered.
And considering the fact that lions were already taken in the other series. Yeah, why not? I mean, you know. Hey, let me ask Chris, if you were to give a brand new writer a little bit of advice, what advice would you give him?
Well, that's interesting because I do actually teach quite a bit now. And I, you know, like everyone who sets out to be a writer eventually, you know, it's often a longer process because you're scared of it almost. You think, oh, well, I can't really write. And, you know, my stuff has to be good straight away. And you have this great idea and you write for a couple of pages and then it's not quite as good as your hero writers. And, you know, you drop away. So what I always say to authors and what I teach is it's a process. It's not this instant thing that happens. The heroes that you read were not writing great pages from day one. They were experimenting, they were playing, they were trying stuff out. So I break it down into a series of stages, and I have various sort of rules about, I call it the mountain. I teach this class called The Mountain, the novel as a series of ascents. And the first ascent up the mountain is about nothing more than scrambling up the mountain. That's your first draft. And don't look down. Don't read back. Don't think about the stuff you've already written. Get up to the top of the mountain. And the other thing about the mountain, of course, which, you know, taking it out of metaphor with the book that stops a lot of authors, is that they think, oh, you know, it would stop me for years. That's why I know about this. Oh, you know, I could write a play's a little hill, but a novel, it's so big. How do I get to the top of the mountain? Well, how do you climb a mountain? One step at a time. You're standing on the ground and you think, well, I can't get up there straight away, but I could reach that finger hold and suddenly you're off the ground. It's the same with a book. You don't think about the top of the mountain. You think about, what does this character want? You know, a lot of it's about character. What do they want right now in this situation? Write that. Keep going. And that's what I'd say to a young, it's all about process.
Right. And that's pretty much what we tell them weekly is we tell them, look, write your story. It doesn't have to be great. We have editors, proofreaders for that. You write your story. And don't edit it. For God's sake, don't try editing yourself. Just don't. Get an editor.
You know, I think I would disagree with you slightly there. I think what people need to do is they need to write the best novel they can. So I go the second climb up the mountain. I've climbed up the mountain. I look down. I think, oh, that part of the story was great, but why did I go over there? Oh, that's useful because it was taking a route, the best route up, i.e. you make your second drive as good as you can make it, and then you give it to an editor.
Right.
And then the two of you work out the ultimate route up the mountain. So that to me is, you know, there's another stage in there that you can, you know, early comment is not useful at all. You know, I always say to my students, never show anyone your first draft. That's one of my other rules. Don't show anyone your first draft.
Right,
because they are already thinking of things like good and bad. You know, I take those words out of my first draft vocabulary entirely. It's not about good or bad. It's about getting the story down. It's about getting up. So.
Exactly. Bobby, I believe it's your turn to ask.
So do you ever experience writer's block or writer's pause? And if you had you gotten it, if you don't.
Right. Well, I don't believe in writer's block. I obviously believe in your show, but I don't believe in writer's block. and it's not that I don't believe in it for myself. I mean, obviously, I know that people experience it and it stops them. For me, it's that there's no reason to stop. You know, there's always something to do. If I run up against an issue with a character, I'm not sure what the character is going to do. You know, I might get up and walk around my desk a couple of times, but I hardly ever, in 20 novels and 4 plays, I can count on one hand the number of times I've gone and left the desk entirely for the day, you know, because often you'll find that whatever you're being blocked by is the very thing you need to push the story to the right place.
Sure.
So I will, you know, I might, you know, they say in skiing, you ski off, say, okay, this character's not, why aren't I enjoying this character? What is the, okay, I'm going to take this character to a bar and have a drink and I'll write that scene. It's never going to appear in the book, but I might, I need to get the character talking, telling me stuff. So I'll put them, you know, one of my big things, another thing I teach is character in action. Obviously you need the ellipses between there because you don't want character in action because that would be dreadfully boring. action. The characters revealing themselves by what they do and say. And so you know, there's always something. So that's why I don't really believe in the block, because I think it's not a block, it's an opportunity.
Right. And almost every writer that we've talked to has the same comment about their characters, that eventually their characters take over the novel. And they tell the writer where they're going to go.
They do. And also, it's very important. I mean, I'm going to name drop something here. You've probably heard of the famous English writer Noel Coward.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
The playwright. So my father, I'll make this story short. It's a longer story. But my father, who was also, it was an actor and a writer, mainly an actor, flew Noel Coward during the war. My father was an RAF pilot, and he flew him around the Middle East entertaining the troops. And he sent Noel Coward a play. And Noel Coward wrote him this wonderful destroying letter about his terrible play. He said, be prepared, I'm going to be rather beastly to you. I didn't like your play very much. That's how it began. But one of the things he says in it, he says some wonderful advice in this very short letter, which I have hanging on my writing hut wall. He says, above all, let your characters dictate your plot rather than your plot dictating your characters.
Exactly. Hey, Tank Tough, don't go away. Bobby, don't go away. We're going to take another real quick break, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. It's Thursday evening, and right now, we're going to hear a little bit about Creative Edge. You know them.
Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started, or you can go to www.creative-edge.com. Services. Creative Edge Publicity. It's your brand. It's your future.
And we are back. And of course, that is Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge. And he has such great writers such as Tosca Lee. And of course, Mr. C.C. Humphreys himself, Jim Christina, and a plethora of new ones and ones that have hung around for quite a while. And Mickey's back. Chris, incidentally, he got his license and he's all ready to go.
Fabulous.
So, I fabulous is right. We've only got a few more minutes. If you got any good words for new writers, because we are, of course, we're geared towards new writers.
Right. Well, I as I said before, I mean, remembering that it's a process, that it is a journey, not a destination. I mean, obviously, there's the destination of getting a book completed is there, but how you reach it. It's so important to, I was once told by a film director, I did this big biblical Roman epic in the 80s called Anno Domini. I was Caleb the Gladiator, and I was on. I was in Tunisia for 10 months filming this amazing part, this big NBC miniseries. Anyway, the director, I mean, came up to me one day. It was a very intense role. And I was standing quietly on the side. He said, I've been watching you. And I go, well, it's probably a good thing since you're the director. He said, I watch what you do. You simplify everything, don't you? And I went, yes, I do. And, you know, I think writing can get very complicated. I come up with this phrase, and I say it to people sometimes, and they look at me like I'm mad. But I say writing is writing. It's not thinking about writing. It's not contemplating about writing. It's actually writing. The magic happens. I'm doing a book now on the Second World War. And I honestly will know roughly where these characters are going in any scene. And stuff happens all the time because I allow it to. And it's you know, people talk about the zone and everything like that, but that almost makes it sound too precious. It's getting rid of all the other stuff that's holding you back. And just doing it, just do it, you know. So I would say that to young writers as well. It's definitely not about the destination. Just start getting your ideas out. Don't think about good or bad. Just start getting them down. And later on, you can go back, and later on, the editing brain, the critical brain, is fantastic. We need it to say, oh, that didn't quite work, but it wasn't bad because it gave me this idea. You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. So we've got only about less than a minute left. So in that time, could you tell our listeners where they can find you on the web? And your email address, if you wouldn't mind, your website. We know that's
Chris Humphreys.com. You can get me there. You can contact me through there. You can join my mailing list there. There's a contact page. Please join. And I send out newsletters every month or so, keeping people abreast. I'm publishing both. I'm what they call a hybrid author, in that I'm both indie, you know, publishing. In fact, Hunted Unicorn, Hunter the Dragon were both published by Random House, but then I got the rights back, reissued them with the third book, Hunter the Shapeshifters, which I wrote specially for the trilogy. But I've also got a big fantasy series out right now with Gollancz, who are called Immortal's Blood. And the first book of that, Smoke in the Glass, is, and the second, no, it's not out in the States yet. Smoke in the Glass is out in the States, and that's about immortality. So that's and that's high epic fantasy, you know.
Ah, okay.
Get in touch with me through my website, author, chrishumphreys.com, or they can follow me on Twitter, HumphreysCC, that sort of thing.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us tonight. It was wonderful having you.
I thoroughly enjoyed myself. Thank you.
Talking to you reminded me of talking to Peter James in London.
Yes. Oh, yes, really?
And he was right in the middle of his happy hour when we talked to him. And he was right in the middle of his second vodka martini. And I might say it was quite an interesting conversation.
Well, I'm doing dryuary this month, so I'm not drinking at all for a month. But catch me in another couple of months' time, and I'll have a nice beer beside me here. I'm a craft beer guy.
Excellent. So. You know, Vancouver is one of my favorite places, so, hey, it could happen.
When we can, we will.
We will. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you. And next week we have return author Chris Enns, who is the president of the WWA, which is Western Writers of America, and her new book, which is Iron Women. It ought to be interesting. We just got it today. So we're going to jump into that one. And that's about all I have for you, Bobby Jean. What about you? Are you there?
I ain't got anything.
So Russ will be with me next week. And next week, going to start doing a live video available on Facebook on the LA Talk Radio page, and so please tune in, and it'll still be on LA Talk Radio. You can listen to just the voice, or you can go in and watch the videos of our ugly faces. So there you have it. So for Bobby Jean and myself, and of course her husband Jim, who's probably still holding up a wall someplace, Russ Avison, Ronan Rosner, and of course, Mr. Sam Hassan, please, we are out of here.